Welcome into the Who's On Podcast, part of the Sabre Podcast Network. Basketball on a little bit of a winning streak. First time we've been able to say that in the new year, 2025. And I've got Mike Barber joining me now to talk some basketball and also the big day, Tony Bennett Day, this past Saturday against Georgia Tech. They picked up the W on that day. Mike, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Good to spend a little time with you on the snowy day.
I know it's a bit of a winter wonderland out here in Richmond and also up there in Charlottesville. So staying off the road, staying in the podcast suite and just hammering this out here, talking about a little bit of UVA basketball after, you know, a very shaky start to the new year. They have won back-to-back games for the first time under Ron Sanchez, back-to-back ACC games under Ron Sanchez. The last time they'd done that, obviously, was last season. All the way back in February. So it's been a while, but, you know, starting to see some signs. But let's start off with the big kind of elephant in the room, Tony Bennett Day, and just kind of your thoughts coming off that day. Obviously, a couple of former players coming in, making some surprise trips, and Ty Jerome, DeAndre Hunter, who had the game in Washington the night before, allowing them to come down, Jack Salt back in. What'd you just make of the whole day and kind of the ceremony there at halftime?
Yeah, I thought it was really, really good. Well done and nice. And, you know, I know a lot of people had reached out to me and, well, what's the vibe going to be like for Tony Bennett Day? Because some people are unhappy with the way he left and the way things are going. And, you know, my take on it was, you know, twofold. Number one, if you're upset, you're probably not there. Right. You know what I mean? Like, this team isn't contending for a title. It's not like the arena is going to be packed every game. If you're upset with the way things are going, you're probably not coming out. Number two, Tony Bennett did an amazing job, right? Like, the simple statistic is Virginia won zero national championships without Tony Bennett, and they won one with Tony Bennett. So, like, everything else to me. And then on top of that, regardless of how you feel about the way things ended, like, nobody has anything negative to say about Tony Bennett, the person, right? He ran a good program. He was a great representative of the university. He's a good person away from the basketball court. He's not somebody that, even if you're unhappy, like, I feel like if you boo Tony Bennett, you go home and take a shower. Like, you're like, what did I just do? So I wasn't too worried about the vibe, and I thought the day itself was great, right? I thought, you know, Tony standing at midcourt, getting his kudos there. You could tell he was a little uncomfortable, right? The hands behind the back, like a shift in the weight. It's so funny because you think of Tony Bennett doing this job on the highest level, right? He's winning a national title. He's on the biggest stage, but he's not a guy who wants to ever be, and metaphorically, you know, figuratively, literally, standing in the middle of an empty basketball court with a spotlight shining on him and 13, 14,000 people stare. Like, it's the antithesis of what he enjoys. But I thought it was a nice day. I thought the video tributes were nice. I thought it was great that Jerome and Hunter were able to come back. They played the game up in Washington. And I thought it was really nice and appropriate that Isaiah Wilkins, Kyle Guy, that the current guys, they came out of the locker room, right? And they were there for part of that. And I think that tells you what Tony means to them, right? That, you know, obviously in Tony's mind, it's like, get back in the locker room, get to work. But they understood, you know, that this was something to be there for. And I really enjoyed the day, and I thought it was done well.
Yeah, heck, Kyle on the podcast actually right before the big day last week, and just he was talking about, you know, it's just a day to give him his flowers, and, you know, kind of, you know, he pays very close attention to the Twitter sphere, as he said, and he knows what people have said about Tony Bennett over the years, and he basically called them out and said, you know, if you don't have anything nice to say about Tony Bennett, then are you really a real Virginia fan? And, you know, that's his sentiment, and I mean, it's not far off. Like, that's the truth. Everything that he had done for this program over the past couple of years, Virginia was not competing with North Carolina and Duke in these top ACC programs before Tony Bennett arrived in Charlottesville. And that's just the facts. You mentioned just that the giant spotlight on Tony Bennett, really the first time in his career that he has had the spotlight solely on him. You could think of some other times that he's talked at midcourt, like, you know, the day that he passed Terry Holland to become the all-time winningest coach in UVA history, but it was like, what, 2 minutes, and like he was out of there. Like, this was a full 20 minutes pretty much just solely focused on Tony Bennett. And It was funny. Ron Sanchez afterwards said, they didn't really talk much about it leading up to it, but he was like, I'm glad they forced him to do this. And he used the word forced, like he did not want to be there for this.
No, and that's been him, and that's, that's what's nice about Tony Bennett, right? Is the things he preaches about what he wants from his program, what he wants from his players, he does live them every day, right? And I talked to Richie McKay about this, the Liberty coach who was a assistant for Tony, and he said it's really easy, especially for the staff, and then it trickles down to the players, but as an assistant coach, to do what your boss tells you in a non-basketball sense. When you see him live it every day, right? If you're Richie McKay, if you're Ron Sanchez, if you're Jason Williford, you want to be Tony Bennett, right? Maybe you're going to do some things different in your program, but you want to be a national championship winning basketball coach. Now, this man is telling you this is, and not even, it's not even to say this is the way, this is the way I do it. And you're there's they, Richie said, you're just going to watch that. And, Tony Bennett reads Atomic Habits. Everybody on the staff grabs a copy of Atomic Habits. It's like, all right, what is this man doing? So yeah, I think the nice thing about it is it's not fake humility, right? People criticize the timing. Well, Tony Bennett was never gonna, and this isn't a knock on Mike Krzyzewski, but he was never going to announce going into a year, this is my final year. Even though strategically there's some things for the program that would be great. He didn't want to go arena to arena and get a golf club and get a rocking chair and do that half court moment. It's just not in him. It's not what he enjoys.
Yeah, are you kidding me? He doesn't want to do that over and
Oh my
over
God.
throughout the season. One was bad enough.
It would have been the seventh circle of hell from Dante's Inferno for him to have to retire a year in advance and live through that.
Yeah, so he did it his way, and the timing, you could talk about that till the cows come home, but it is what it is. And the sentiment that I got from players, I talked to Kyle, of course, and also talked to Elijah Gertrude leading up to it, and then also we talked to Andrew Rohde after the game, and everyone has said, at least publicly, like they are very happy for him. They are happy, that he kind of found the way to end his career and kind of get what he was kind of wanting in life. Looking at Tony's comments, I thought a couple interesting things. We keep going back to the reason Tony retired, and there are some very interesting statements that he made throughout his talking. I don't know how long it ran exactly. Everyone was hoping it would stop at around 2 minutes so we could all post it just to Twitter in one video, but he went a little further than that. But he pointed at the national championship banner and said, that's probably the last amateur national championship anyone will win in college basketball. And obviously that's a point directed towards NIL and the transfer portal and everything else that's developed over the last couple of years. Also pointed out at his players who were all there on the court with him and said, these guys did it the right way. No surprise there. That's his sentiment. That's what he's always communicated, but just kind of what did you take from that?
Yeah, I think it's so important for people to remember that Tony Bennett isn't against athletes getting paid, right? He's not one of these coaches that's trying to say like, oh, they don't deserve a cut of. Tony Bennett's problem was with an unsustainable system where you never knew who was where. And I've said this a million times. I think Tony Bennett would be fine in a system where we have a salary cap and we have free agency and the pro model would be fine with Tony Bennett. He's not against guys getting compensated. He's against this willy-nilly, you don't know what you have. And there's more of an impetus right now. I've had so many coaches tell me this, and most of them off the record, like nobody wants to just, but the reality of college sports right now is agents don't get paid unless you move teams, right? So it's in the agent's benefit to tell you you're not happy here. If this school really liked you, they'd pay you more. Because the other thing is, there are no rules and guardrails on what the athlete's agents are taking in. In the NFL, I could be, I think it's 2%. There's in the agreement, it caps what an agent can take from an athlete's deal. There's no cap in college. Kids are being told things like, oh, 18, 20% is standard. That's highway robbery. So it's all of the other things that Tony had a problem with. Look, I've said this before. He's young enough. He's healthy enough. He's an active guy. He likes to play tennis and ping pong. Get out. You know what I mean? In 10 years, when they get this thing figured out, maybe he comes back and does it again and beats everybody's tails again because he's that good a coach. I think he made a point of calling out this system doesn't work. And his guys were the last bunch to win it before it turned Wild West, really ugly. And I think Tony believes in his heart that it's going to get better. It's going to come back around, that there's going to be, but how long is that going to be? And to me, the decision he made was always, I don't want to be a part of the transition because the transition's ugly.
Yeah, and it has been already. You could see just kind of the signs from, guys, arguing over NIL contracts, hitting the transfer portal after a couple of games into the season, and on the school side, they're keeping guys from entering the transfer portal. Like it has gotten ugly already, and it just doesn't seem like there is a body that is interested in setting those regulations and trying to figure this out and trying to make it less like the Wild Wild West that I keep comparing it to. And you're exactly right on the agent point of this, because in pro football and pro basketball, every professional sport on the planet, they know that's true, that if you move teams, you're going to get more, paid more money. But guess what? They have contracts that bind them from moving every single season.
Right.
And so that is what has not happened in college sports yet. And there's a whole lot of stuff that has to happen to get to that point. And I think that's exactly what Tony Bennett is talking about. I mean, Tony, UVA men's basketball is pretty set up well in the NIL space. They have not been opposed to using it. And, they went into the transfer portal this past summer, right before Tony Bennett stepped down, and, used a good chunk of NIL cash to build the roster with a lot of players from different places.
Yeah, and I think it's just, like I said, it's the guardrails. And Jim Phillips, the ACC commissioner, told me this in the preseason before football. He said, look, he said, the NCAA has been completely neutered, right? The NCAA knows that if they go to the Supreme Court, anything that's challenged, they're going to lose. Supreme Court told them that. You come back here, you're losing. So the NCAA can't do anything. They can't tell you, well, this looks like it's too far, because they know they're going to be challenged in court and they're going to lose because the model has been deemed unconstitutional. So what do we have to get to? Well, we've got to get to a point where you either re-empower the NCAA, which I don't think anybody really wants. Jim Phillips is an advocate for a third party. Like, let's create an enforcement bureau, whatever it is, and let them. We'll agree on the rules, the presidents, the universities agree, and then we've got a third party outside that enforces this and that monitors this. Again, those are the kind of things, and you've done this, you've been around college athletics. Everything moves at a glacial pace. It's going to take forever. And how many coaches are going to walk away? And how many kids are going to get lured into the portal and end up somewhere that's not better for them, right? While we're figuring it out. That's the crummy part is I know at least two or three kids, and I don't think they'd want their stories out there, but they were happy where they were. And they did get kind of talked into believing, hey, if the school really loved you, they'd pay you more. And then they went into the portal and they cut two of the three I'm thinking of got more money. They did get their money, but they ended up at a place where they don't love it as much. And they said, well, I guess, I know one of them said to me, well, that's the business, right? I took the money. It's not about being, but shouldn't part of college athletics still be, right? Like, and that's the thing is I just want a situation where athletes truly have the choice. Like right now, it feels like they're getting bullied and strong-armed into taking dollars and going someplace, and then they don't like it. And then that's great for the agent because he says, oh, you don't like it? Let's go to the next place and get a new deal. Like, but is that good for the kid? And look, I'm also in the boat of I want to see people get paid. Like I think these athletes bring in the revenue. I want to see that money go back to them. I think we undervalue the value of a scholarship and a college education. I think maybe the choice should be we can pay you this NIL money or we can pay you a scholarship. Maybe not both. But overall, it's just we need some guardrails. We need some systems in place.
Absolutely. Real quick, last thing on Tony Bennett. He also mentioned his biggest regret of his time at UVA, not bringing back the orange jerseys earlier. I've loved seeing the orange jerseys. I'm a little confused by the use of the orange jersey so far. They had a nice debut against Memphis. I know they lost that game, but that was the right moment to do it, a big game at home. And then you wear them on the road against Pitt, and we're going to talk about that game and some other stuff in a little bit, but yeah, it's been a nice to have the orange jerseys back. And Tony Bennett never seemed opposed to the orange. It was just, I think he's a little more superstitious than we admit, and that loss against Duke way back when kind of warded him off of it.
Yeah, and I would probably quibble with that being his biggest regret. I know he was being a little facetious, but the end of his last ACC tournament game, I think there's is probably something that keeps him up more at night than the Orange. But yeah, no, I think that, look, anything you can do to market and draw excitement to your program. I love that they brought out the Orange. I love everything they're doing, and I'm a believer that if you gave this current iteration of coaches 3 or 4 years, that they would be okay, right? Like I believe that. I believe that Tony Bennett left a 2-year plan to rebuild this program. I believe that because most of the guys he'd got in the portal have multiple years. I believe he learned from the Jordan Minor deal that you can't just plug and play guys in the pack line. I believe Tony Bennett made a 2-year plan and then he walked out. And I believe Ron Sanchez maybe only gets 1 year to do that. And that's however you want to look at it, it's unfair to Ron to say, execute a 2-year plan in 1 year.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's a lot in there that we'll break down coming up after the break. But I guess if you could say your one regret, you even jokingly, was the orange uniforms. Like, Tony Bennett had a 15-year career at Virginia where there's probably very few actual regrets that would keep him up at night, as much as, losses like NC State or even, I mean, I don't know if it's a regret now, but looking back at UMBC and some of these other games over the years,
Furman and sure, but I think that that's the great thing and the beauty of Tony Bennett was I don't think it keeps him up at night. I don't think he has regret. Like Tony Bennett was always one of those people who kept everything in perspective and truly did, right? Like wanted his and it followed down. God, remember when they lost to Syracuse in the Elite Eight and we're all sitting courtside booking our flights to the Final Four, and they managed to gack that game up. Right, Syracuse goes with the press. They miss a couple bunny layups, and all hell breaks loose. Malcolm Brogdon came out to the press conference, did the press conference, and then stood outside the locker room and talked to a few of us for like 10 extra minutes. And I remember when he walked away thinking, like, that's the Tony Bennett effect that's bigger than any win or loss. It's Malcolm Brogdon had perspective. He knew that he lost a basketball game. It was a down moment, but it wasn't the end of the world. And it was to, so to me, like, yeah, I hope that Tony Bennett doesn't lose any sleep. The guy won a national title. He did so many great things at Virginia. And I believe he is at peace. And that's what I saw, Preston, at midcourt, even though we joke about, being awkward for him. I didn't see a guy who was wondering, did I do the right thing? Like I saw a guy who was at peace with where he is in life right now. And I loved seeing that.
Kyle Guy says he goes over to his house with his son almost every week, and Tony and Laurel have been doing some traveling, and he's just said there he is different. Like you said, you talk about, no, he hasn't changed, he's the same guy, and he was like, no, he is visibly different. He is happier, more joyful, and it seems like he does not, not 1 second kind of weighs on him from if it was the right decision or not. You mentioned the Malcolm Brogdon thing, and that sparked another one is, walking in there after that Furman loss and seeing Kihei Clark watching back the play on his phone and then proceeding to talk to reporters for, however long the open locker room was just about that play. I mean, that is another one of those moments where you're like, these guys, just kind of the way they are brought up. Like, it was always a thing that we talked about in the media. It's like, it's different going and talking to basketball players because they have been trained in such a different way than other athletes. And that came from Tony.
And not only trained, but like I said, with the assistants, influenced, right? I don't think Tony Bennett would ever say, you need to stay extra long and talk to the media, right? Tony never did extra media. But I think what he instilled in them was a sense of basketball isn't the all and end all, and treating people the right way and being a good representative of yourself, your university, your family. Like, I think those lessons were there. And then he let it, the kids decide, the players decide, how do you show that? And the way we saw it as media members was the classy way they dealt with us, the time they gave to us, the humility they showed, and the honesty they showed. Like I said, I don't think Tony Bennett said, be this way with the media. I don't think he particularly cared per se with how they were, but he taught them kind of how to be. And they translated that into that's how they were with us. And we were really lucky to have that to deal with.
I mean, we could go on for, a full day's worth of podcasts just talking about Tony Bennett and his 15 seasons at Virginia. Let's get into some of the basketball now. Obviously, Virginia winning that day against Georgia Tech, 75-61. That's coming off beating Pittsburgh on the road, 73-57. And all of a sudden, Virginia picking up a little bit of momentum in the ACC, just looking like a more, competent, prepared basketball team, a little bit more free out there. What have you noticed? What has stuck out to you about Virginia in the last couple of weeks?
Four games over 70 points, right? Like that's, I mean, like it's very different than what we've seen. Now, when they're winning because of defense and defense leading to offense, which is what they were in the best of the Tony Bennett years, right? Defense generating offense. But I am seeing a more competent, confident, capable offense right now. And I think that that is applying pressure to other teams. It's a two-edged thing, right? It's a seesaw. If you can apply pressure offensively, then the opponent feels more pressure on the other end of the court. And now it's easier for you to tighten those screws defensively and vice versa, right? If you wear people down with your defense, it's harder for them to play offense. I think we're seeing, you hear it all the time in football, complementary football. Seeing we're seeing a little more complementary basketball. Look, Andrew Rohde, I will. We can do a whole nother podcast if you want on how great I think Andrew Rohde's been. Andrew Rohde was so maligned a year ago. The fans wanted him off the court, out of the program because he
Not
couldn't
even
hit
just
shot.
a year ago, earlier this season.
Yeah, when they went back to him to start the year, when he started the game at point guard, people were like throwing themselves off bridges. Every coach in this program would tell you last year, Andrew Rohde did the right thing. He was in the right spots. He made the right pass. His shots didn't go down. They were not down on Andrew Rohde, quite the opposite. To see him play the way he's playing now, last game, what, 9 assists, 0 turnovers? That's unbelievable. When you think about the skill, I'm not trying to, but the skill of the offense that they have, it's not the most skilled offense. 9 assists and no turnovers is phenomenal. The way he's played in the last 5 games has just been off the charts. He's been good all year. He's in good defensive position. Look, he's not Kihei Clark. He's not Reese Beekman in terms of the tip of the spear disrupting. But if he's a guy that the other team's point guard can't get past, well, everything flows better from there. Andrew Rohde, to me, has been the MVP of this surge. And yeah, I just, anytime I appear on radio or a podcast, I'm going to take a minute to bang the drum for Andrew Rohde because I'm so impressed with what he's done.
You have to at this point. Since they start kind of got into full ACC play, so December 31st against NC State, he has 8 turnovers in his last 11 games. I can't even count up the assists right now, but it adds up to like a +6 assist to turnover ratio. It's absolutely incredible what he's done. And he's kind of just been kind of the tempo and the balance that this offense needed, someone to kind of take the reins and be the point guard. And I know for a while they said, oh, we don't have a point guard. We have a bunch of different guys doing the ball handling. No, Andrew Brody's the point guard. He has been the one kind of dictating the tempo for this team. And that's freed up Isaac Mealy to have better scoring games and to kind of focus more on the off the ball stuff that he does so well. It's also freed up Day-Day Ames to be kind of that offensive punch that they needed, someone that's a little bit more creative. And it was interesting, when I asked Ron Sanchez, working on a story about Elijah Gertrude, who's been out for the season, he said, Elijah's a lot like Day-Day. And that's kind of what led to this quote is, he said, people always say you've got to recruit guys that fit your system. Well, I think you just have to recruit good players and then fit them into what you're trying to do, but also give them the freedom to be who they are. And that's exactly what they've done with Day-Day Ames recently. He's averaging about 18 points a game over his last 3 games. Obviously, he had the big 27-point explosion at Pitt that no one saw coming. But it feels like I said it after the Pitt game. It feels like they took the training wheels off Day-Day Ames, and he's getting to be the guy that people thought he would be.
Yeah, I think so. And I think part of it too is not having to play the true point because they haven't been thrilled with his defense, right? So Day-Day, you looked at it was a trade-off. You want that pop, that penetration offensively. You don't want the turnovers and you don't want the defensive breakdowns. What can you live with? What can you afford? Right? They always say that, your culture in a program is, what you tolerate, right? And what you kind of promote. And so you promote defense, you promote ball security. Well, you can't tolerate when those things go astray. Now, the fact that Rohde has become such an every minute point guard, now you play Ames off the ball, a little more on the wing. Suddenly, he's not the tip of the spear on your defense, and the breakdowns maybe aren't quite as critical. Plus, he's in a little bit more comfortable role. You mentioned Gertrude. You got to remember the way this lineup was envisioned. Jalen Worley was the point guard. Gertrude was bringing some of that downhill pop, getting to the rim. They had the pieces there, and then for whatever reason, it didn't work. So I give Ron Sanchez a lot of credit, man. He's kind of reworked this thing, one, to change the system, to change how they're doing it, and then two, to say, okay, well, this was a good concept, but maybe we got a different guy in this role. So let's put Rhodey at the point. Okay, we're not going to be as aggressive on the ball, but we're going to be solid. They don't have the rim protection that they've had in the past, but if you play a little more solid in front, it gives a guy like Buchanan more time to slide over. Coffee. So are they the dynamic shot blockers that we've seen? No. But if you give them another minute to slide over, are they rim protectors? Yeah, you can protect the rim without sending the ball into the third row with blocked shots. And I think that's what you're seeing too.
The other thing I'll make a point out of this last week and kind of their better play has been the big performance. Blake Buchanan, Jacob Kofi, Anthony Robinson, just doing a lot of the little stuff. And I know Blake's had some decent scoring games. He had some big rebound numbers, but the effort and energy. I mean, you think back to that Pitt game. Blake Buchanan's diving on the floor to get a ball and throwing it, from the seat of his pants to get Data Ames for a wide open shot at the other end. Those are kind of the little effort plays that I'm seeing. And then with Anthony Robinson, his development has kind of started to take those upward steps that you see now he's gotten more playing time. Against Georgia Tech, the thing that impressed me the most was it doesn't even show up on the box score, but it was when they started switching more and Anthony Robinson's out there on an island guarding Nathan George for Georgia Tech, who is at that point with Lance Terry dealing with some injuries, their best shot creator, leads the ACC in assists. And he's doing fine out there. He was handling it. He kept him to, pretty minimal stuff out there. So really impressed with what I see from those bigs. And now the question kind of shifts to Elijah Saunders got a couple of minutes last game coming off the injury. How do you incorporate him back into this?
Yeah, and that's part of the remarkable part is that they've done so much of this without Saunders. But I mean, think about everybody we just talked about. Is there a player, without bagging on anybody, is there a player on this team right now that you don't feel like they're on an upward trajectory? Like, that's what's really impressive to me about what Ron Sanchez has done. And look, I get that this is an elite program, and we can debate another day what they're going to do in the future. But one of the really encouraging signs for me is it feels like everybody in this program is on an upward trajectory, and that's helping to carry the team. Yes, they're finding out how to play, things like that. But these players are developing, improving. People were so quick at the beginning of the year to say, Anthony Robinson, well, I guess it didn't work out. Like, okay, that's not the way it works, right? He's not on your timeline, he's not on my timeline. I would love Anthony Robinson to have been playing the way he is right now in the season opener. Great. So would Ron Sanchez. He's not on our timeline, but he's getting there and he's improving. Look, the only guy that we really haven't seen anything from is TJ Power, right? The Duke transfer. And again, 2-year plan from Tony Bennett. Maybe that's a year away of getting comfortable in. So I'll keep beating that drum too. I just think that I look up and down this roster and I see everybody trending in the right direction, and now I'm seeing those results on the floor. That's really encouraging.
Yeah, progress has been made, across the board. Andrew Rhodey looks night and day different. Even Isaac McNealy at times, he went through that slump in there in the middle of ACC play, and now he's getting really good first halves. So we'll see I don't know what's happening in the second half. Maybe he's just not looking for a shot as much. Up and down the board, you see a lot of guys making improvements. You see guys popping up with big games. And don't forget about Tane Murray's 20-point performance down in Miami. It's good stuff. And a lot of people will be quick to point out that they have tougher ACC games coming. You got Clemson and Duke, Virginia Tech, which Castle has been a nightmare for Virginia in recent seasons when they had good teams, or more well thought of teams. So it's going to be interesting to kind of see where this goes from here, the rest of the way.
This is a brutal stretch, right? And so everything we just talked about comes with a caveat of one, can you play well in this stretch where you're at Virginia Tech, you're home for Duke, you're at North Carolina, you're at Wake Forest, like that is, and then you have Clemson. Like that is a brutal stretch. And I would say on paper, they probably the underdog, definitely the underdog in every game. They may
Probably,
lose,
yeah.
right? They may lose every one of those games. How do they do it? Are they competitive? Are they able to keep engaged? Are they able to get to the other side of it, where you end the year with Florida State and Syracuse, pick up wins, and make sure you're in the ACC tournament? Look, it feels like we're headed into a rough stretch for Virginia basketball, and it's ironic because it's coinciding with them playing their best ball of the year. I don't think their best ball is good enough to beat Duke, but is it good enough to beat Tech at Tech? Certainly possible. Is it good enough to beat Carolina at Carolina? That's really possible. Like, we
Yeah.
laugh because you say, oh, at Carolina. At Carolina ain't what it used to be,
No,
right?
not
So,
this year.
like there's a chance there. Now, at Wake is going to be tough, and I love Clemson. I think Brad Brownell is the most
Yeah.
underrated coach in the ACC. That's a tough one on senior day. But yeah, I mean, if you can get Tech or Carolina, or Dare to Dream, Tech and Carolina, and they're both on the road, and that's hard. Then you got those last two games that are very winnable. And look, I'm not suggesting that UVA is going to be cutting down the nets in Charlotte. They're not going to pull an NC State surprise kind of deal. But I just think that I think they've improved as the year went on, and I would love to see that continue through whenever the season ends in March.
Yeah, you're hoping that this next stretch isn't too rough on them and they don't start to kind of lose it and have some of those 20-point losses like we've seen earlier in the season. Because it does coincide with this positive stretch that you've been seeing, and guys are a little bit more upbeat just around the program, the way they talk, the way they move. And so it's going to be a really interesting stretch. Real quick before we get out of here, we got to make reference to Damon Stoudamire's strong stump speech in the post-game press conference. No one asked him about it. This was his opening statement. He came in, and this is what he went right into, saying that Ron Sanchez should have the job. And I know, our pal Greg Medea at the Daily Progress, he talked to some other ACC coaches on the conference call this week, and some similar sentiments were expressed. Where do you kind of take this? And I don't want to put a percentage chance on it right now, like, and Ron Sanchez even said when he was asked, he has not had any conversations with athletic director Carla Williams about this, and he said he doesn't have time to really think about what they're doing across the street in administration. But where do you take this?
Yeah, it's tough. I it reminds me a little bit of James Johnson, his second year at Virginia Tech. Things were not going well. New AD coming in, all that kind of stuff. You don't have the new AD at Virginia, so Ron maybe has that in his favor. But I always said this about when James Johnson got fired at Tech. I said it was very unfair, completely unfair. It was also probably the right move for the Tech program. There is no way it's fair to give up on Ron Sanchez after 1 year with the improvement we've seen. But when you consider the level of Virginia basketball, the kind of coaches you can attract, the expectation of the program, the resources they put in, it might be the right thing to do. Look, any coach you're going to ask is going to tell you two things. One, they don't want to see any of their colleagues for the most part lose their job, right? That's just natural to fraternity. Number two, Ron Sanchez is doing a good job. You can criticize lots of things. Ron Sanchez is doing a good job. Players are getting better. The team is improving. They're figuring out how to play. They've changed the offense from a year ago. They're finding a balance of the old and the new. They're getting better defensively. There is no report card that I can fill out where I say Ron Sanchez is not doing a good job. So that's number one. But number two is, could somebody else do it better, faster? Right? Could somebody else do it better, faster? They fired James Johnson at Virginia Tech. Totally unfair. Who did they go out and get? Well, they went out and got Buzz Williams. Buzz Williams got them to within a shot of the Elite Eight. So you can't argue with the results. I think it's going to be a really tough call. I think if by some miracle here they can get some marquee upsets down the stretch, go into the ACC tournament with some momentum, win a couple games. Look, I would love to see Ron Sanchez back. Like, I think he's a continuation of everything great we said about Tony Bennett. I think he's a good basketball coach, and I think he is showing that he can get a team to improve. But if you're Virginia, you can go out there and get a big name. And I don't know who that is, if it's a Shaka Smart or a Rhino, but who's going to come in and immediately jumpstart this thing and get you right back. That's going to be really tempting if you're in charge at Virginia.
You compare it to the James Johnson situation, say there's not a new AD, there is not a new AD, but there is a sentiment that I have heard from people around the program that it's not just Carla Williams making this decision, leading this search. I know that, there's going to be a lot of other thoughts in this process than just one person going out there and finding the next coach for Virginia men's basketball in this process. And I always think about the situation and just how fast things can change in college basketball, or really any college sport these days. Look at Louisville. There was no program in the Power Five that was further in the dumps than Louisville under Kenny Payne. Pat Kelsey in 1 year has them looking like an NCAA tournament team and being really competitive, brought in some good players, and completely changed that roster in 1 year. So even if, I know Virginia would love to keep some of these guys on this roster going forward, but even if that's not possible, it has changed that quickly.
And that's the question. And part of it, you wonder if there isn't some Virginia culture here. Like, Virginia culture is more to build things and to have some patience. And God, 2 years should not qualify as patience. But
No.
here's the other thing you have to keep in mind. Pat Kelsey is going to be the example that everybody holds up, right? Because Pat Kelsey is awesome and he did an awesome job. There are more guys who didn't get it done in year one. And when that happens, you completely reset. So here you've got Ron Sanchez. He's kind of in the middle of this process. And do you believe that he's going to make a big enough step in year two that you feel good about it? Or do you roll the dice that Ryan Odom, Shaka Smart, whoever it is your Pat Kelsey? Great. If you told me that was guaranteed, I would help pack Ron's bags. And I like Ron Sanchez. You know what I mean? If you tell me you're good, but that's not a guarantee.
No,
There
never
is
is.
no guarantee. And I think Ron Sanchez, in many ways, is the safe choice. Then you got to throw in the business aspects. How do the boosters feel? The donors feel? Do they respect what we're seeing from Ron Sanchez? And that becomes a major question. Look, Carla Williams, at the end of the day, whoever else's voice is big in this is Carla Williams' legacy.
Yes.
Okay, right? Who she hires to replace Tony Bennett is going to be Carla Williams' legacy. I don't think she takes that lightly. And, who knows? 10 years from now, maybe she sticks with Ron Sanchez, and Ron Sanchez is going into year 11, and everybody's saying, look at that. She rolled that thing over from Tony Bennett into Ron Sanchez, from one Hall of Fame coach into the other. That's the dream. The nightmare is, what if they don't make any progress in year two? And then you make the move. Then they say, Carla Williams wasted a year, wasted NIL money. Wasted moment, all of those things. It is an impossible decision. I'm glad I'm not an AD. I would be very slow to change. I think more in football than in basketball, but I think when you change, you can set your program back to square one. And I think Ron Sanchez and Virginia are well past square one right now. So, yeah, that was a long-winded way to say I have no idea what's going to happen.
That's how you sum it up.
Yeah.
Yeah, I will say, I guess the one question that I wish we had asked at the time, and you just never know how these things are going to play out. We didn't expect Tony to retire out of nowhere,
We did not.
is we kept hearing about the 2-year plan. What was the result on the other side of the 2-year plan? Like we kept hearing the 2-year plan, like they thought they were going to be, with this roster, like it was going to get to another level in the year two. But what was the result that they were aiming for? I guess is just what we don't
Yeah,
really
and that's
know.
fair. But I think that at Virginia, the result is always top four in the ACC,
That's what
contending
it
for an
should be,
ACC.
yes.
Right. And I think that, look, Tony Bennett did that with some teams that he did that with some great teams. He did it with some teams that were flawed. Right.
Yes.
And I think that is the confidence in the system. Right. Everybody can bang on the system and you're going to lose some close games. But the system is that when you're not the best team on the court, if you grind, you can be there for the last shot. You can be there at the end. So I think that Tony Bennett thought, I think he thought this year's team would be better. And certainly him being gone, Jalen Worley, Gertrude being hurt, there's things that happened. But I think that year two was supposed to be, hey, you're a team that's up in the top four or five of the ACC. And if Virginia's there every year, that's where they want to be, man. Like they're going to have another year like 19. I don't know if it's going to be like 19 in terms of how it played out and winning it, but they're going to have years where there's a little more talent and it really comes together. And the offense is so efficient that it fuels the defense, vice versa. But if you're a Virginia basketball, you want to be in the top five of the ACC every year. And this was a 2 year plan to get them back there. And it'll be interesting to see if we ever get to see that come to fruition.
Yeah, time will tell, and time will tell on this rest of the season. Mike, thanks for coming on and talking some UVA basketball this week. I know it's been kind of a weird year and just kind of ebbs and flows. And am I gonna talk about basketball this week? And obviously, this is the week you had to talk about basketball because what they've been doing, and obviously Tony Bennett being honored this past week. But Mike, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, next time I come on, I want to see some stuff on those shelves behind you, man.
I know. The moving process has been slow. It might be a little slower. I also just wanted to share real quick that podcast wise, we'll kind of slow down a little bit coming up. My wife and I are expecting our third child very soon. So we're going to slow down a little bit and then kind of play it by ear. We might go down to one podcast a week, but it's been great and I want to keep doing it. But yeah, we'll see. And hopefully by the time that I get back on here, we have some stuff. I got boxes and boxes of stuff to go on those shelves.
Well, soon you're going to have some new baby pictures too to go up. So
Yeah.
all the best to you guys and good luck with all of that this week.
Appreciate that. All right. Thanks for listening to the Who's On podcast. You can follow everything on thesaber.com. We've got more coverage, a lot of baseball coverage going on up there, and some spring football stuff ahead of that, as well as basketball. Follow, subscribe to the Who's On podcast on Apple, Spotify, wherever you find your podcast. And we will see you whenever we see you next.